This is business management. Learn about the legal issues that farmers and artisan food producers face, taxation, insurance, GAAP, and innovative business models. Keeping the books, basic accounting. So just mainly Judy's going to be, she's kind of does a lot of the business stuff of what we have on our farm. So I'm going to just run through a few things to kind of just give her a little bit of, show a little few things about, it's kind of a smattering of things here to start with, and she's going to get into more of the detail of the actual regulation and book stuff. So our operation is a small family farm. Judy and I are the directors. We personally have set up a corporation, an LLC, and a trust to help us with the liability and tax management. I'm in family partnerships and family S-corps other than my own. And personally, I like being in business as us, as myself. Cooperating with others, yes, but dividing entities and knowing what I'm responsible for in money, time, equipment, and land. I like this website. It's helpful for family business planning ideas. You can see the general idea on the front page, but more details as you open it. Not only the one place, but a place to get some education and maybe help. The Farm Journal Legacy Project, and there's a lot of other things out there besides this. This is one that I've kind of, I get emails to, and I get updates from, and they're a local. The person who actually presents things in here is about 30 miles away from my place, and so, you know, even though they don't show that here, it looks like an international or a national website, whatever, and it probably is, but anyway, another, just a sideline book that I've kind of enjoyed reading. It's called The Ultimate Gift. It's a book I've found helpful. It's presented more in story form as kind of more of a parable of character development for business. And so it's just something I've just thought I'd note here. So I'm Duval. I think you could Google it. The Ultimate Gift. You might mix it up with some other books in there too. But it's a story about a wealthy landowner who dies, and he gives a instructions to his lawyer for his nephew to go through certain steps to inherit anything from him, and the development that he goes through over a year's time to do that, and what it does for him. So in case you're wondering if, you know, what the content was. So I'm touching on this briefly, and if there's more time and you have questions after Judy's part, we can do that. Maybe some more details that you might be interested in terms of how we manage what we do. This is just a very simple scenario that I think it's, you know, try to keep it simple. As far as business, make money, use it wisely. It's, you know, I can elaborate on that more. There's a lot more detail of that, but just, you know, sometimes you forget if you don't keep it simple. So be prepared to handle the business side of things if you want to become a farmer. Being well-versed in all aspects of business, balance sheets, profit and loss, payroll, bookkeeping, marketing, production is a good idea to be involved with. And know, you might have to do it all, but at least it's helpful to know how to read things. Even if you have an accountant, what are you looking at? You know, but it's also helpful because on a day-to-day basis, we still have to know what's going on in our business. I generally am always considering the cost, whether it be fertilizer or packaging or whatever, looking at the root material and not taking every salesman's opinion about their products. I research them, look at alternatives, compare to conventional, reason through options and cost and benefit to make decisions. We try to make each vegetable crop profitable and do our best to measure its success, sometimes on a daily basis, factoring immediate pricing, boxes, labor, and overhead, whether to continue harvest. Like the old song, you've got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and when to run. Our vegetable broker has helped us weed out what not to grow for our efficiencies in vegetable production. For example, we decided cucumbers were a better crop for us to grow than bunch beets. More labor, same price per box for beets, and not growing beets or winter crops gives us time to rest a while. Here you just see a table of our bunch of beets we've been harvesting out of the field. Now we're going to start packing them into boxes. We probably just finished washing them, you know, the mud and whatever else off of them. And that's just me in the middle on the shirt. You can't read that. It didn't come out very well. It says beets me on the shirt. That's why I put that in there. And then the cucumbers, you know, this is just this last year we decided to change our production of cucumbers, and we actually put them under shade and we trellised them, and it was a big improvement. Before, we were picking them all up off the ground as a regular field cucumber, and just the labor of that alone was just, you know, the cucumber crew was not always the, you didn't want to always be on the cucumber crew, you know, it just was all day bending over picking up cucumbers and putting them on the belt, and this just made it a lot more pleasant. You work underneath the shade, and anyway, that's just a side thing, but so in our tree crops, they're not as flexible to modify. Trees are long-term, sometimes taking 7 to 15 years to be profitable. So you are generally in it for the long haul. You know, one time, quite a few years ago, prune prices have changed now, but, you know, years ago, they were on the downhill slope for quite a bit, and we were trying to decide whether we were going to put any in on some lease ground. So I talked to my accountant, and he ran all the numbers that, you know, just an average of what we were getting at the time, what it cost for production. And he ran the numbers out based on what I gave him. He said, looks like at about year 15, you'll be breaking even. And so, you know, those are some of the numbers that we've dealt with. And it just varies. It's not the only one, but it's something to consider when you're going to put a crop in long term. But it's all over the board. I had a prune crop that one orchard I planted one year. It seemed like it took me 10 years before I even got production. We went through the first few years when you don't have any, and then we went through 3 or 4 years when the whole industry didn't have any because it was dry during the bloom time, and none of us got any fruit much, and so it just, but then eventually it caught up, and we were getting good production. So it did pay off in the long run, but it was kind of like, wow, when are we going to ever get anything out of this? So it just varies, but as much as possible, we try to keep our place in order and looking good with a wholesome and neat appearance, though a challenge sometimes and not always easy to do, considering used equipment and salvage materials we use for our operation, as you can see on the right. The priority of the immediate is a bit messy at times, but it is always something to come back to. I often tell people who come to visit, what you see is what you get. Meaning at any given time of the year, depending on what we're doing, that is what you get to see. This is just we've retired this coal box on the right now. It's just storage now. It used to be our cooler. That's the only cooler we had for quite a while for our produce. And then this is our cucumber. You see, this is we netted this. This is shade. You can see, can't see it very well. But so we ran our cucumbers up this year. And this is them when they're young, just before we started shading them. We just put stakes in. And
is that net just on top?
Yes. Yeah, we trellis it just like we do our tomatoes, and we end up spreading the fabric right over the top of them. If I did it better, I would have, which in the past I've gone to a recycle place and bought plastic bottles that would fit right over the top of the stakes, because then they wouldn't rub holes in the fabric. And on the long run, probably better to put a hoop up and put it up that way, but that's just more of a cultural thing. In this case, we pick with carts.
Oh.
Yeah, before we're picking when we do our tomatoes, steak tomatoes and our cucumbers, you know, we pick all with carts. And then we just shade for the tomatoes. We end up shading the carts so that you shade all day long for the workers and for the fruit. So now Judy's going to take over part of this. The legal issues that farmers and artisan food producers face, GAP, and some of the other stuff.
Quick story, how did you come up with the name Woolly?
Yeah.
So Woolly Farms is a farm in Live Oak, which is 3 miles from our place, actually closer than Gridley, across the county line. And we got out of vegetables for a while. We produced vegetables in 75 till in the 80s. And then we stepped out and we sold some of our equipment and some of our business stuff to some people in Live Oak. And about 10 years later, they wanted to get out. And so they asked us if we want to get back in, and we said okay. But they had this label, Woolley Farms, and so we ended up just keeping it because they were already in the marketplace, known as the markets that we weren't a part of. And so we just said, okay, we'll keep your label, we'll keep your name, and we'll use it as ours. Before that, we were called Johnson's Backyard Produce, and we just kept this name that was known. And so the markets that we sold, they sold to, knew them, and we just took it over.
Okay, so I'm just going to kind of, I mean, very touching the tip of the iceberg here on kind of what the business involves, the business side. I think that one thing is you, I put our cert up here, deciding if you're wanting to be organic, and I know on smaller sales and stuff, some of your customers don't require your certificate, but if you get into the markets or stores or anything like that, they're going to require you to have your certificate. And I think some at least out in California, farmers markets also require that. So we use QuickBooks, and the requirements are if you use their payroll program, you can use the same year for 3 years, and then you have to upgrade to the latest version. And so I haven't decided if I want to upgrade to 17 yet or not. But this is if you are doing a business, you know, pretty well. I mean, a business, not just gardening. I would suggest some kind of accounting program because it will save you a lot of time. It'll do a lot of the work for you. When you put your entries in, it'll pull up reports rather than having to hand look at paperwork all the time and do a lot of calculations. So we have the payroll service. I'm going to change the slide in a second. I'll let you get your picture. This is just an example of our invoicing when we have a sale to a store or a customer and how you would enter that stuff in your invoice in the QuickBooks. And it's I'm trying to see here. I guess I can't even read my screen now. But anyway, this is how you enter an invoice. And then here's a payment when your customer pays you. It will have your invoice number there, and you'll click that, and it will zero it out, your charge, and then you'll be good there. And then you can deposit from there, which I didn't put depositing pictures in here. This is kind of out of place as far as QuickBooks goes, but if you're going to be in any kind of selling to any stores and stuff, this already we're required to do. I don't know that you're necessarily required to do this yet, but you will be. It's kind of your global number they assign you. So anyone, any store can scan a number, and they'll know it's Woolley Farms in our case. And it's not a GIN number, it's a GTIN number. A G10 number is what they call it. I have a little mistake on the bottom there. So the next slide shows our bill of lading. So when a truck comes to pick up our order, this is our bill of lading that we keep a copy and we send one with the truck. It goes to the customer. And you can see the G10 number there. It's our number plus you're given a number for each commodity you have. So there's a number added on to our G10 number that's for Roma tomatoes. So when it gets to the store, they can just scan that number and they know it's Roma tomatoes from Woolley Farms. And
the store gets that number?
Yes. Well, our sales marketer does this job for us, which is nice. They do a lot for us as far as all the GAP requirements are, and food safety and traceability. This is a traceability issue here. And so our sales marketer, he has our G10 number, and then he's numbered all our commodities. And so as they're doing the orders, they actually do our bill of ladings. We just print them out, and they're ready to go.
What is it, federal or state?
GTIN is federal food safety. And just also for traceability on here, I'll explain that the date is done in the Julian calendar. So that was the 220th day of the year, which was August 8th of 16, which you see in the front there. And then that 443 is, as we're keeping track of our lot numbers, which is days we've picked and what we had, that is our 443rd pallet that we did, and that has these numbers on them that we'll trace back. And I'll kind of go into tracing.
Quick question. Does this not only just help as far as if there's a problem with the product as far as disease, but does it also help the store know, like, how long it lasts on the shelf and lets them, like, is it actually a benefit?
It's a benefit, yeah. Actually, they like to not have to go and count all their inventory in their cooler. And so they can just scan things, and when it comes out, it's scanned and it's not there anymore. And so it really is helpful to them to keep track.
So it's faster than they're like, well, this product is quality, and they might order more. Mm-hmm. So it gives them a better.
Okay, here's back to QuickBooks, how you would enter a bill. That's just kind of what it looks like. And that'll keep, you can see on the right-hand side bills that have been made to them and paid to them, and it kind of, you can have a quick glance if you're behind a payment or it has the dates and stuff, if you've forgotten one, or if you've kind of have a mix-up, you thought you paid something but it doesn't look like you did, and maybe you did and they sent you an invoice, and you can clear it up pretty fast that way. So now I'm going to move in. Like I said, I'm kind of touching the surface. You know, if you have any questions, feel free to ask about QuickBooks or any kind of invoicing and all that kind of thing. There's a way with QuickBooks. Maybe I'll wait till I get to state comp. So labor requirements. We, unfortunately, for our employees, have two sides of our timesheet. It's pretty detailed, and the reason it is we had the lovely labor commissioner come visit us, and he told us that, he said, I understand what you're doing on the larger one, but the one on the right is what he requires. When he comes and checks out your time cards and your hours with your employees, he wants to see time in, rest period, time out for lunch, time in, rest period, time out at the end of the day, if it's regular time or if there's overtime. And he wants to just be able to glance at that and know that's what, you know, easy. The wording on the bottom, they're required to have work no more than 5 hours to have a lunch. They're required to have a 10-minute break, half of that 5 hours. Well, if they're choosing not to, that's basically they're saying, I know that I'm required to have this and I chose not to. Kind of to cover your, for you.
Yeah, these aren't standard. We made these ourselves. These time cards are all.
Yeah, and so the time card on the left is more for us to keep cost accounting and efficiency and all that kind of thing. So from this time card, it gets entered into a timesheet, which I'll have on in QuickBooks here coming up. But how many hours and where they worked. So you can see zucchini and sunburst and cucumbers, etc. They mark in the day, how many days they worked with that commodity. And then we enter that into our payroll sheet, and you can see what field, like we've got a Campbell field, a Terry field, Hopkins. So it's where they worked, what they did, and then do you see those little numbers? Like it says truck farms, and then there's a number, and orchard, and all that. That is state compensation codes for us. So we have an audit every year, and every 6 months, They want us to say what our costs were in each of these. They're all different percentages of fees, could you say? But you have to to pay. And so it's so much easier when you have this to go by, to pull up a report and get those numbers for reports and for audits for them. And it really does track everything very nicely. And then also from this, you can see it has what commodity. And so it will pull up reports right here. It says reports. If you click that, then you can go in your payroll employee and you can come up with your numbers for the costs that it's costing you per employee for these commodities.
You can create your own timesheet layout in QuickBooks.
Yes, yeah. You put the data in, and then it'll show like this on the timesheet. That can all be created personally for you.
Yeah, so it says on that one where it says bean, tomatoes, sugar, it says class at the top of that. So you can add several classes of, you would have to add those zucchini and tomatoes and sugar.
Right, yeah. You can always add or take out, or pretty much you can't take out, because if you have something in it, you can mark it as inactive and then it won't show up in your reports anymore if you're not using it, but you can't take it out, because then if you have to go back and make a report, then you won't have it in there. It won't let you do that.
And then the service item said custom farm picking or something? So you had to do custom farm picking, and then the options were the zucchini, tomatoes, or whatever.
You can actually make the whole thing. You can pick new, and you can put, farming, climbing a ladder. You can write anything you want in there. Yeah. You don't have to, choose from something. You can actually make it exactly to what you're doing. So then this is an example of the payroll center. There's a scheduled payroll and a unscheduled. Like, if somebody comes in late with extra hours, or someone you don't need them anymore and they're leaving before the scheduled payroll, then you can give them a final check and an unscheduled payroll. And basically from that timesheet, then that's where you see these numbers come from the truck farms. This one person worked 5 hours in truck in Orchard 27, and the other orchard they worked 62, and so they worked 94 hours in a two-week period. We do a payroll in a two-week period.
So you kind of touched on the reason for the different categories, truck, field, orchard, et cetera. Is it pay is different, or the payroll fees?
Payroll fees are different. They're coded differently for state compensation, basically.
So different rates, or they just...
They're different rates, different percentage rates. Yeah.
Based on accidents or whatever the most commodities, they charge a different amount.
Like the workers?
So we track this in our QuickBooks, and then we can just pull up a report and just fill out the numbers for each of those. They had the numbers by them. There's like a truck farm that'll have an 0075 or something like that. So you have to initially put that in, but then it keeps track of everything for you. And then here's the pay liabilities window. So, depending on your payroll amount annually is what they'll assign to you, how often you have to do your payroll taxes. If it's very low, sometimes you can get by with quarterly. For us, we have to do it monthly. If you really have a high payroll, they'll make you do it weekly, actually. But we have to pay our disability and unemployment taxes and all that. We have to do that monthly, and this is the window that'll calculate that all for you from all the timesheets and payrolls that you have done during that month.
Do you like having every other week payroll?
I do. We used to do it every week, but that's a lot of time. It takes my daughter and I literally, when we have a full... 30 employees, it'll take us 16 hours to do the entries, just because we're so detailed with our commodities and everything. And so to do that every week,
Plus our employees aren't always filling out their time, that's correct. So we have to review every time card.
Yeah. So I was kind of, I don't really want to do that to them, but they're making twice, they're getting twice the amount in 2 weeks, so it's the same amount of money. So it's worked a lot better doing it every 2 weeks for us.
Do you know if QuickBooks has the locality specifics as far as fees and stuff, or
as far as what
fees and things like based on your local county, state?
They do. They have all that fit in, and they give you updates all the time of any changes they've made and anything like that. And anything, even a lot of the food safety stuff, the requirements, any labor requirements that are with your state or federal, mm-hmm. They will do updates, and it will be included in your program.
Okay. So they have farm-specific?
Yes, they have all kinds of things you can choose from. They'll have a questionnaire when you begin. And it'll say, you know, are you an accountant? Then you would go business accounting or agriculture or ranching or whatever. And then there's a lot of accounts in there that will be applicable to you. And then you'll have to add some of your own, and you can add your own accounts also.
So which QuickBooks are you using?
I'm using the Premier because I'm pretty detailed. Depending on how much you're doing, you know, you might not need the Premier.
So if it was just, do you and your husband go on the timesheet and the payroll as well?
No, we don't.
If you were a smaller farm, would you recommend doing like just your family getting on the in the case of worker compensation, or is that maybe I missed something?
No, we had the choice if we wanted to be on work comp and employees or not. We chose not to. We have our own insurance, and now they've made a new rule in California, and I'm still trying to understand it if we have to or not. But there's like, if you have so many, like we're incorporated, so if we have so many shares of it, then they're requiring us to have state comp. And I'm trying to figure out if we're in that or not yet.
So you don't get paid from through QuickBooks?
We do, but Brad gets quicked as, I mean, Brad, I don't get paid. Brad gets paid as a contract laborer, as an independent contractor. Okay. Is how we've got it set up. Yeah. It's just a matter of preference. You can be employees with no problem and go through the state comp and everything.
Do you run that through QuickBooks though, or
like, yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I just have a chart of account that's contract labor.
Okay.
So then these are just an example, and you can pull these up at the end of the year when you have your annual report you need to turn in. These are all in your QuickBooks for you, and if you've done all your work with your payroll and your payroll taxes and everything, then you just click a button and it comes up and all your numbers are in there and you can send them in. So like I said, an accounting program, it doesn't have to be QuickBooks necessarily, but it will save you a lot of work.
Have you ever used any other kind of bookkeeping management software?
Brad used Quicken for a while when he was doing the books.
Years ago, we used a Peachtree years and years ago. And there's a lot of programs out there. Right in Gridley, there's a company called AgData that he developed the AgData software, and that's been, a lot of people use that, and it's more ag friendly. I can't say that QuickBooks is necessarily all ag friendly. There's a lot of stuff in agriculture that doesn't fit in here in some way, it seems like. So there's other programs, but the cost is part of the thing. So you end up paying a lot more for that software package and updates, which is, this is more generic.
I think the Premier one here runs about $400 if you've got the payroll service, where that Peachtree one was like $2,000 or something like that.
That's more when you're dealing with larger scale farming and you're doing smaller scale.
Right.
QuickBooks would probably suffice.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to do all my books out of my checkbook in my back pocket for a lot of years. At the end of the year, I would go through and put it on just a spreadsheet, one of those typical books, you know, and just write it all in, and then calculate the order poorly for my payroll stuff. You know, I'd write down my payroll withholding, my checkbook stuff, and then add it up and finish the year like that.
So the QuickBooks, like for your payroll, will have a questionnaire when you start, and you put in your rates, like what is your unemployment rate, or you know that they're requiring of you, and all that kind of stuff to do the right calculations. And you always want to make sure that you've got those incorrectly. In pause correctly, not incorrectly. So so with us, we do have quite a few employees. The labor commissioner, I mean, they mean business. If they come to check you out, so we like to make sure that we've got everything when we have an employee come, that that we've gone through everything that we need to go through with them, so we've made an employee checklist, and these are things on the checklist that we want to make sure that we've covered with our employees, and then we feel good about letting them go out to the field, and if we get checked, then...
So what are some of those things on there?
Well, I was going to kind of go over some of those later, but application... Okay, application is not necessarily mandatory at this point, but you can have an application, and I'll show you a picture of that later. And then you want your W-4, absolutely need a W-4, an I-9. Notice of employer for us is state comp notification and the MPN. Our notifications that state comp requires us to give employees. All of your EDD employment development issues here that we are required to give them. Of course, you need a picture ID to see. You don't have to keep one. If they're under 18, you need a work permit. And then safety training, time card, all these things. You need to show them where the labor laws are that you have stapled or pasted or somehow on a wall where they can see them. All those things. And this is just for us. This is something we do so that we know that we've covered everything. You can look them up online. You can look labor laws up online. You can look up, yeah. And I'm going to go through some of that here, where you can look and what you need to look have to run a business. So here is an example of your I-9 form. And I do want to say that, again, if they check these, they're very picky on how they're filled out. I don't know how many of you have done this or not. But you see on the right, you have A, B, and C, or B and C. That or is very important to them. Don't fill out A, B, and C, or they will not like that. They'll fine you $500. It's A or B and C, and you don't do A if you do B and C. Here's an example of... acceptable documents for your I-9 if you're hiring somebody.
You mentioned that your husband was contract labor. Are the rest of your employees also contract labor? Or
no, they're regular employees.
And what was the, why make him a contract person?
Because we're not doing state compensation and everything.
Right.
We're just being independently working for Woolley Farms. Okay, so we also have a handbook. Again, I don't know, depending on maybe the size you are, but there's a lot of labor laws out there about no favorites, no, you know, treating one way and one the other, and harassment, and, you know, there's just a lot of things that you need to be aware of, and so... you know, what do you want to do with your cell phones? If everyone, you know, somebody's on their cell phone half the day or whatever, you know, all that kind of stuff, the kind of clothes that are required for their safety, all that kind of stuff, we make a handbook so that everybody's on the same page, and then we have something that we can go by if we need to fix something, because it's not even just our personal preference of efficiency, but it's also the labor laws higher up than us that are requiring us, or food safety, or the OSHA. All of those have requirements.
You can write in your own things here that you want to customize to your own farm.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use any legal counsel to
file
your documents?
I do, and I'll get to it just in this next slide. So we belong to FELS, which is Farm Employment Labor Service. There's an annual fee. This one is for California, but Farm is through Farm Bureau, and I believe they have one for all of your states. And they, anytime you have a question or anything, and this is actually a book, and I'm going to show you our labor laws in California. This is the pages that we have to abide by. And somewhat know what they are. So, and this is the notebook. My daughter tried to take a picture for me of the tabs here. The OSHA, I can't really read it from here, pesticides, anything that has to do with employees. And see, there was something else. Oh, so you can call them any time with any question. They'll come out to you, and they'll teach you all these. They'll go through all that with you. You have, if you got into some kind of trouble with a disgruntled employee or whatever, you have so much legal hours of legal. Annually, it's been about a little over $200. No, it's worth it if
they also supply a lot of your property for your walls.
Yeah,
labor laws.
Yeah, that you can put up. And
you're saying Fells will come out to see?
Yes, they will.
Not the state.
No. Fells will come out and get you all educated if you so choose. Or if you're a member, you can have your own username and password and you can go and all this is available to you online. I use them a lot. You know, now we have in California the sick paid leave thing now, and it's really confusing how the rules they've made for that. So I call them all the time and get clarified on that. So they're very helpful. So OSHA is another thing you need to consider when you have employees. It's for, as you see, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and this is just one little example about heat safety. But there's all kinds of things, you know, their clothes, their heat, their water, all kinds that you need to consider in your operation if you have employees. And here's your state comp. And obviously that's required if you're going to have employees. If you're having employees, then you have an EIN number, which is an employment identification number. This is a federal number, and that is for your federal payroll taxes. Here is a state employment number for your Employment Development Department, or your state taxes.
Is all of this required, even if you have like one or two employees? Or is this just for us?
Yeah, if their payroll...
If you hire somebody, you got to withhold this and pay it into the federal or state programs.
Yeah, unless you do the...
Yeah.
No, if you're doing payroll, these are all required.
Do some people hire in people as contractors?
Yeah, but there's a whole set of rules for that, so know your rules for your state.
Because some people want to try to, you know, they circumvent the regular system, and so they've made a whole other thing about that thing. I guess. I'm not up on all that, I guess, but there's something about that.
Yeah.
They have to be pretty independent.
Yeah.
Really. It's almost like they have to have their own business freedom to hire them.
You know, if you're only needing them for a short time in one or two, you know, you may want to look at apprenticing that your state will allow, things like that. Educational. That.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. It's really getting crazy. Even I don't even like to do piecework, you know, because an employee more of an incentive to work faster. They get paid by a piece, you know, like how many boxes they pick rather than hours, you know. But they've gotten real strict in California on piecework hours. And the lady actually that did our organic inspection this year is being fined $16,000. And she has a very small farm because of issues with her piecework. So it's not that it can't be done, just really understand what the laws are when you implement it.
Do you think it's getting easier or more difficult with this administration?
Which one?
Just started.
You mean it's getting scarier?
Well, my feeling is it'll get easier with the new administration.
That's my hope too, because like this is kind of, I mean, we're having everything in the nursery business, which is not food safety stuff at all, but it's like it's getting more and more difficult.
I think our new administration, from what I understand, is trying to make it easier for businesses to function.
That would be a federal, but state
and California.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Have you guys done like a base wage and then benefits based on piece work or whatever?
We've done that. I mean, I've done that. You know, you have to calculate when what they make with their piecework. It has to meet minimum wage requirements. But I don't know. California's really strict. They've got all kinds of things poked in there. And
I'm not sure if you get enough of that. You just keep everybody at a wage.
Yeah, I find it's easier. I find the labor commissioner in California very brutal. So, anyway, now I'm going on to food safety, and I'm presenting this, and I present some of you. I don't know if you saw this last year. I'm just going to go through it real quickly, but this lady, Kathy Carlson, she does consulting for food safety, and we knew nothing about what anything was when we were required to do this, so we had her, and she was very thorough and very nice, and I'm going to quickly run through this because I am wanting to show you what they're expecting. And this is a federal. This isn't just a state thing. This is federal. So good agricultural practices. These are guidelines I'm going to go through quickly. If I'm going too quick for you, let me know. But they're concerned about not only what you can see, but what you cannot see as microorganisms and foodborne illnesses. They're trying to, of course, make it so people don't get sick when you buy food, and they're concerned about E. coli, Salmonella, and Listeria. And there they are. And this is a slide that she's put together that shows how fast they multiply. Salmonella, these are symptoms of Salmonella and the duration. This is E. coli. If you have a real bad case, of course, these hit young children, babies, and older people easier because of immune systems. But they can actually cause kidney failure. Listeria is the same.
I mean, I always think, you know, you see the reports out in the news of, you know, E. coli infestation and so forth. You know, is it really to that grand scale that we're seeing in the media? I mean, is this really prevalent in, you know?
People...
We've never had trouble
with our farm. In all of the issues, it's never really gone back to the farm. I mean, that we've seen. But
the things that they attack the farm from farmers in regards to it, but I'm like wondering, is it really the farmers, or was it somewhere along the line after that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not careful, it can be problematic with a farmer who would deliver melons in one truck, and then manure would be brought back in that same truck, and then he would wash his truck in the parking lot before picking up melons. And so he was washing all, but anyways, it came back that there was some foodborne illness problems. So they want to know that we have practices in place to prevent stuff like that from happening. They want common sense to be written down.
They want you to do what you say and say what you do, and they want you to document everything. So contamination can be caused by handshaking with dirty hands, walking through water puddles, and contaminated cloths.
So walking through a water puddle?
Yeah, because if an animal has been through it and...
Do you mind just going back to that?
Did your feet touch the produce or something?
Yeah, maybe, well...
Spinach?
If you walk through it, yeah.
Shoelaces came untied and were there.
Yeah.
I'm up.
It's hard to know where to quit.
Or if you've set a box down where you've walked, you know, it's all that. Yeah. So, it goes on. So how do we reduce the risks? They are wanting us to look at our soil, our water, hygiene surfaces, and wild and domestic animals. They're always present in the soil. They want to look at your land history. Was it a dump before you bought it? Or did you raise cows on it before you bought it? Do you live downstream or downhill from a dairy where there's runoff, contamination runoff, all that kind of stuff? They're wanting to look at all those things. Manure composting, these are There are rules for that. Raw manure application, if you have orchard, you're not allowed to apply any 90 days before harvest. If it's any kind of vegetable or anything that touches the ground, not to apply 120 days before harvest.
Discretion manure?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So compost run for 6 months with...
Well, I think they have some guidelines for that, but I don't know, you know, if you document it, that's what they're looking for on the next one. They have some guidelines there. In a lot of places, what we do is we buy a commercial compost. We have them supply us with the analysis that documents what the if there's any pathogens or not.
So here's the land history. They want to know if any of this, you know, was it organic before? Was it not? Did you have any flooding events that would have brought in contamination? Any animals? Any industries that were close or around where you're farming? And this kind of explains the same thing. Adjacent to you, do you have any of that going on close to you that could affect your farm?
How close is adjacent?
Well,
if you have like an adjacent property that's 100 acres.
Well, it could be. It just is there. What is adjacent like that could affect your farm? Like I was saying, the example. Say you're lower than a cattle farm, you know, and there's runoff of, you know, if there was a lot of rain and runoff from the cattle manure into where you're growing your product. That kind of thing is what they're worried about.
You worry about their dust is a factor. They'll look at dusty from dusty compost yard.
So basically, there's an industry close to you that contaminates your crop. You're held culpable, not the industry that's doing it.
Basically, they're going to say you don't pass for your product for food safety. So here's so you
they
can
have a certain amount of points. If you can sort
yeah, you have to pass with 80%. With USDA, some are higher. There's USDA is not the only one that can inspect you. Here you can see an animal hole, and this is an example of you don't want stuff like that can cause contamination in your well water that you would use to water your vegetables or wash them. See the little.
Yeah, they seem
to think that change. If people are coming to your farm to purchase your stuff, those laws kind of change a little bit as far as precautionary measures. Those measures change. If people are coming to your farm instead of to buy your produce versus you selling it out in the market.
Yeah, there's some flexibility there. There's like an income range. Like, are you a very small farm? Are you a small farm? Of when you need to be compliant with this. You know, if your buyers aren't requiring it, you know, it's just for you to understand to be safe enough that you know that you're giving a product that won't be contaminated.
And he says something about looking, OSHA is looking at these different environmental happenings on your farm, what happened before. Does that mean negatively want any animals on your farm?
Well, I'm gonna go through that in a little bit, okay? So I'll go through this quickly. Do I have till what, 10:30, or what do I have
yes.
till? Okay, I better kind of hurry here. So they're requiring that no eating where you pick, where you grow anything. You come out, you eat, you wash your hands. They have a rule, sing happy birthday 2 times to yourself as you're washing your hands for the length that you need to wash your hands. And your sanitizers don't count. You have to wash them with soap and water. And they want you to use non-perfumed soap in case someone has allergies. There's 3 water sources, a well, your city water, and surface water such as ponds, streams, and rivers, and they require different testing. A well at this point is once a year. They're thinking of changing that, but I just checked again, and it's once a year. Your city water, you just get a copy of their water tests, and then your surface waters, you need to test weekly.
Do we have any guidelines on rainwater?
I don't know.
But they didn't say.
You would test the water. I mean,
the
you would
water
have.
Itself.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what would you think if it's just in an uncontaminated? I don't know.
That
you would have.
Okay.
If you're used to irrigate out, you'd have to test it. Mm-hmm.
Is it legal to have rain fall in the
lake? Right.
So, but make sure your container's not contaminated.
Right.
So here's just an example of a well and a pond. For water testing, here you need to test your water, and this is what they're testing for, your quantified generic E. coli and a total coliform, and that's...
So it's just pathogen.
Yeah. And this is the requirements for your water. Okay, so then you have hygiene for yourself and your employees, and here, like I said, hand sanitizers are not a replacement for your washing your hands, and you need to have clean clothing and shoes, and your bathrooms need to be well stocked with paper towels. You can't use cloth towels or anything like that that could get bacteria on them. You have to have a sign-in sheet, anyone that comes, that they understand your hygiene rules about not eating in the field and washing their hands and what to do when they go to the bathroom, eat or sneeze or cough. Or everywhere you have a bathroom station, you need to have a hand washing setup.
Yeah, will you be posting these slides on the?
Oh yeah, if you do that, that'd be great.
I can do that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's actually we can get it for you. We were trying to link all the slides with Audioverse, so that when you look up, you can actually get these slides with the
Oh, great.
Oh, good. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Like I said, this first part of this, Kathy put together for me, but I called her to make sure, and she said this time that, yeah, I could put this up for everybody. Then you have a bathroom cleaning log. I wish you could see it, but anyway.
The bathrooms that you're showing up there, do you maintenance those field bathrooms, or does someone else contract that in?
When we have our porta-potties, they come in and clean them out, but then we take the responsibility in our safety operating practices of if there's a spill, and then we maintain them. I mean, you cannot have they go in and they'll hose out them and everything, and then you got this puddle of water. You got to clean that up. You can't have any standing water in there. You can't have a toilet paper roll on, laying on the floor or the back or anything. It has to be in a, like we have bins that we keep extra toilet paper outside, paper towels outside in a closed bin that's marked clearly that what that is. So some respects we do, but we don't pump them out. And then a cleaning log every day, that we cleaned it and we mark it. You have to document. You can't just tell them, but I clean it every day. I mean, it has to be documented or it's as if it wasn't done to them. So for their bathrooms, they want toilet paper, one-time use paper towels, unscented soap, liquid, potable water, which is drinking water. It's good to drink for hand washing, that were tested for bacteria. And you want appropriate covered trash cans, hand-free. You don't want to be touching the trash cans. And weekly maintenance is the minimum. So then your surfaces of any of your harvest equipment, containers, transport bins, knives, all that needs to be clean. Everything doesn't need to be clean daily, but like, your utensils, they've got to be designated between clean and dirty. Have your clean ones in a clean one, your dirty in a dirty container, and washed appropriately. Animals, their requirements on animals is they don't want any poop anywhere in your growing area. No coals in your growing area. So not only do we have to pick our produce, but then we have to pick what's on the ground every day and make sure it's not in our growing area. The reason for that is they feel that is something that could draw the animals into your growing area. which contaminated. If you do find something, then you have your, you make your procedures, how you would pick that up, gloved hands, plastic bag, put in the dumpster. If there's like a bird pooped on a plant, then you tape off like a 3-foot area around, so that nobody's going to pick any food off of that plant or touch that until that's taken care of.
You need to have a no-fly zone over.
So we have daily check fields, which we check the temperature, and this is included in your food safety rules, but it's also OSHA. Your temperature, your heat, there's laws for different temperatures. If you're over 80 degrees, you're required to have shade, and your water has to be like under 70 degrees, drinking water for them. If it's over 95 degrees, then you add extra break times, and you have to have the shade and water available at all times. So we had a checklist for them for watering cups, and water always has to be available. If you're going to replace the water, you can't take your jug, fill it up, and bring it back. You have to have that one there, bring another one, and then remove the old one.
No, but they can't eat or drink in the picking area.
They can
so
drink.
It has to be like a...
Well, see, they don't quite know all their rules yet. But anyway, you have to allow them to drink. So, like, they're not drinking in where they're picking, but we have picking wagons out, and we have a jug there with water, with paper cups, and then they can throw those away and then put their, you know, and go back to work. So.
But water has to be accessible at all times.
Accessible.
Like you can't take the jug away.
No.
And not have water available.
Yeah. And you have to have cups away for them to drink.
It's kind of basic Christian ethics, you know, that's making it easier to remember it all.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you don't want to do these things.
Right.
Now you're troubled.
Right. So then anything that you use for your farming, such as boxes or, say, irrigation pipe or anything like that, it needs to be off the ground. And, you can have, like, on a pat, you know, your little logs or something that your irrigation pipes are on, just so they're not on the ground. And their reasoning for that is that a squirrel or a rabbit might go in your pipes and contaminate your pipes, and that first water that comes out on your vegetables, they, you know, there might be contamination. They're more likely to go under the pipes if they're off the ground than in them, or boxes or whatever. Everything needs to be off the ground. You need to do a checklist every week, daily. We did it daily. Go through your growing area. And there's questions. They have a questionnaire. You know, did you find poop? What'd you do? Did you, you know, this or that or whatever you find in your place? You can answer no. Or did you see any tracks? Did you have any flooding? They'll ask you all those questions. So it's very important with them that you, there's a corrective log, action log. So, like we forgot to document for a week that we clean the bathroom daily. Because we have, besides the porta potties, we have bathrooms up by our pack shed. And so we just wrote in our corrective log the date, the location, and we put, we've cleaned the bathrooms daily, forgot to document, and I'm documenting from now on. And then you just go on and date that and sign it, and that's good for them. Okay.
I was wondering how much time is logged that you guys log on logging all these.
The year before last, we actually hired somebody, and that was their job, to maintain the food safety, checking the fields, checking the employees that they had their gloves on, all of their food, their safety, the temperature, where they were eating, where their trash was, all of that. We actually hired somebody to do that.
Do you have somebody do that now?
No, we cut back a little bit. The year before last, we did. We still were running our pack shed, and this year we actually went to all field packing. And partly was your there's different sections of food safety. What's the word?
Good hammer preps.
Good, yeah, that you get audited, you know, and approved for, inspected on. Your pack shed is a whole nother area and a whole nother set of these procedures. And just the one we did for our field was $800. And so we were not ready to go there yet. So we chose to slim down actually our produce that would be well packed in the field.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.